Let's say there are just two of us in the room. Chances are that one of us, either you or me, has heart disease that could very well take our life. And that leads us to ask, how should we eat for our heart?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1178th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in Puerto Madryn who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, this just in from the American Heart Association. Half of all U.S. adults have some form of cardiovascular disease, which kills more Americans than all forms of cancer and respiratory diseases combined. To get a handle on what this disease is, picture yourself on the way to work at the peak of the morning commute. Traffic is bumper to bumper and moving along at a crawl. Suddenly, five cars up ahead smash into each other and everything comes to a screeching halt. There you sit. Were that clogged freeway inside your body, it would be called arteriosclerosis, which essentially is what happens when the blood vessels that carry oxygen and nutrients from your heart to the rest of your body become clogged with commuting pieces of plaque, and everything, meaning your life, comes to a screeching halt. Now, since half of us are likely to have this cardiovascular disease, and we happen to have a board-certified specialist in cardiovascular disease sitting right across the council from us, it's probably a good time to ask, what should we eat for a healthy heart? And so let's give a big welcome to Dr. Jay Johnson, who's a Cardiovascular Associates of Santa Cruz, California. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you aboard. So, first question is, what made you, as a young medical student, go straight for the heart?
Well, that's easy. It was likely my father. So it was my father was an architect, and he had heart disease at a very young age. He has a congenital cholesterol problem that I inherited, as did most of my family. He had his first heart attack at 40. At about 45, he had open heart bypass surgery, had multiple heart attacks and strokes, and died at 50.
Wow. So I better figure this out.
Yeah.
There you go. What does it take to become a... Now, earlier we were talking about the difference between a heart surgeon and a heart disease specialist, which is right. What you are. What is the difference there?
So after 4 years of medical school, you decide on a general specialty. So either that's surgical or a general medicine specialty. To become a cardiologist like myself, it's an additional 7 years of training after medical school to be a board certified cardiologist. And to be a surgeon, you go through a general surgery program. Also, the whole thing's about 7 or 8 years. And then you become a chest surgeon.
So that's like, what, 40 years of schooling to get to be my goodness, a long time in school.
Yeah.
Well, there it is. So your business card is kind of scary. I read it. It says you are a board certified in cardiovascular disease, coronary angiography, pacemaker and defibrillation implantation, and clinical and invasive cardiology.
Yes.
So how many things can go wrong with our heart?
a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. The heart has a lot of different systems. There's sort of, I like to break it down like a room, an analogy of the heart being like a room. You have an electrical system, which causes our heart to beat. And you can like the electrical system in a room. And so I see a lot of patients with heart arrhythmias and electrical problems. The heart also has a plumbing system, like the faucets in our house, and the plumbing system can get clogged up. And there's also structural systems like doors and walls, so people can have valve problems or structural problems with their heart. Those are the big categories.
So when somebody comes to you, step number one is, well, what's wrong here?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, having been the subject of one of your tests, I'm scheduled for a medical procedure, and they asked me to get have my heart checked out. Yeah. And you plugged me up with a bunch of wires. What were you looking for?
Right. So we do an electrocardiogram, which is just the electrical picture of the heart. And that can give us a little bit of an idea of the structure of the heart and the electrical system of the heart.
But not the plumbing.
Not so much the plumbing, right.
How do we check out the plumbing? What do we do for that?
So our stress test is the most common test for that, where we do the electrocardiogram, the EKG, while a person's exercising or walking on the treadmill. And we can look at that at rest versus at stress, mm-hmm. and that can give us an idea about the plumbing.
And so we can really kind of get an idea of what's going on inside without going inside to see.
Right. We have lots of tools for
lots
that.
Lots of tools.
Yeah.
What other kinds of tools do you use then?
So there are a lot of imaging tools, CAT scans and X-ray type of tools. We look at other sort of sophisticated tests that give us an idea of what we call perfusion, which is blood flow to the heart. And we can actually measure blood flow in different regions of the heart using these imaging techniques.
So how long have we known about all of these techniques? This is relatively new stuff, isn't it?
Yes, a lot of new stuff.
And it seems like not so long ago we didn't have any idea what was going on.
That's very true. And my dad was a perfect example. You know, I look back at the therapies he got. Of course, I was young in high school and early college. But a case like my father's would be managed completely differently today.
What did they do for him?
Not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot, right? Yeah. So they knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
But they didn't know really what.
Yeah. What to do about it.
What mm-hmm. to do about it. So they knew about the clogged arteries, right?
Right.
That much they knew about.
And they knew about cholesterol back then, mm-hmm. but didn't have any effective treatments.
Well, I guess where I'd like to go now is, how long does one's heart last?
Well, it's lasting longer and longer. You know, people are living longer and longer. I have many patients with full, happy lives in their 90s mm-hmm. and healthy hearts.
Yeah, that would be my father-in-law. Yeah, he's full of piss and vinegar at 93 and getting into all kinds of trouble and having fun still. But the American Heart Association says you get 2.6 billion beats. Okay, that was... that's how many times your heart is on average beats. So I thought, that's interesting. Wonder what exactly that means. And so I started to do the math on that. 80 beats per minute, give or take an average, you know. So that's 115,200 beats per day. 42,048,000 beats per year. And so 2.6 billion divided by that 42 million gives you 61.834 years.
Huh.
And then your heart quits beating and it's all over. Well, if that's the case, there's a lot of Walking Dead running around here. So there isn't kind of an average, and yet the average seems to be getting longer.
Yes, the average is getting longer, and I think there's a huge spread. You know, sometimes the average isn't that helpful because people either are dying young of something or living much, much longer.
Well, and I was wondering about a heart in a healthy person, and the heart in an unhealthy person, and. Can you tell the difference when somebody walks in the door if this person is just basically healthy or basically not healthy?
Well, it's hard to know. It actually is. A lot of heart disease is silent, so people don't feel problems or notice that there's a problem, and so we uncover it in other ways.
And how would that be?
So with all of your testing
tools.
or even just a simple medical history, you know, learning that a patient used to enjoy hiking and outdoors or climbing stairs, and now they're not able to do those things as much, you know, clues like that mm-hmm. can tell you.
So what happened to Jim Fix, the runner? I think he passed away at 52 years old.
Yeah. He passed away quite young. And, I think that's a perfect illustration of a common misconception about heart disease in general, and that is the genetic component is commonly underappreciated.
Okay. It's kind of like your father then.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Well, folks, today we're talking about your heart, my heart too, and the fact that the American Heart Association says half of us have cardiovascular disease. That's a lot. What can we do to avoid that? What can we eat so that we can stay healthy? That's a question on the table today. And we have a cardiovascular specialist to help us out, Dr. Jay Johnson here, whose father had the problem. And so he went into the profession and learned how to fix it, hopefully. And that's what we're going to learn. Do stay tuned right back on the Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, What's Eating What is what's eating our heart and causing all of this problem. Half of us have cardiovascular disease. Dr. Jay Johnson, how did we all get this disease? Half of us.
Yeah, it's very common. Part of the problem is that atherosclerosis, or also called plaque or hardening of the arteries, to some degree occurs in all of us. It's a little bit like gray hair and wrinkles. You know, mm-hmm. as you get older, you get some of it. And so using that as a definition, we all will eventually get some degree of plaque and hardening of the arteries as we get older. If that progresses to the point where it actually obstructs blood flow, then it becomes a much bigger problem.
What did you think of my analogy of the freeway?
Yes, perfect.
Perfect. Pretty much the way it is. So that plaque, what is plaque?
So plaque, that's the holy grail in science, right? This is one of the biggest killers worldwide. So we've got thousands of brilliant minds and labs around the world trying to answer that question.
What is plaque?
What is plaque?
Don't know.
We know a lot. And what we know is it's this combination of lipids in our cholesterol and fats in our body, in our bloodstream, along with our immune system. So they call it a lipoinflammatory process. And many, many factors go into
lipo.
It.
Lipo. So we're talking about fats.
Fats, yeah.
Fats in the blood.
Yeah.
Okay. That takes us to Ansel Keys and the Seven Nations Study, which took place back in the 1950s. Ansel Keys was a research scientist at the University of Minnesota who went out to figure out what the relationship is with respect to people and their diet and their heart disease. And I think he was the first to actually give that a consideration.
Yeah, it may have been. It's something that's widely studied in the last couple of decades.
Right? Something that we're really starting to focus on, but yeah. He was the first. And what he did, he insisted that saturated fats were the problem, which is to say egg yolks and meat and things of that. But there was some interesting things that came out of his studies. One is that although Keys was a staunch in his belief that saturated fat causes heart disease by raising blood cholesterol, he was one of the brave few who insisted that dietary cholesterol was pretty much irrelevant. What does that mean? So he's a staunch believer that saturated fat causes heart disease, but that dietary fats don't make any difference.
Right. Well, certainly dietary cholesterol, it makes no difference. When we talk about a person's blood cholesterol, the test that we do all the time, mm-hmm. we're talking not about their cholesterol, but about their lipoproteins. So these are specialized little particles, very complex particles produced by the liver that have proteins and multiple kinds of fats, including cholesterol and free fatty acids. And these little complex particles are the cause of heart disease. So the dietary cholesterol does not have a great influence on that.
So these are something that the liver is making for some specific purpose. Do we know
right.
what the purpose is?
Oh, yes. This is what transports the fats to all the cells of the body
oh. right,
to use. Yep.
So they're like little buckets carrying along the nutrients to the cells.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we need them.
Absolutely.
So there then must be a difference between good cholesterol and bad cholesterol?
Yes.
Ah.
Absolutely. So the there are good particles we call HDLs, H for happy, and LDLs, L for lousy.
And okay. So that happy and lousy. There you go.
So the LDL particles are the bad ones, and there's a strong relationship between the amount of LDL particles one has in their body and the amount of plaque or atherosclerosis mm-hmm. one gets.
Now, do we know what the difference between the H and the happy and the lousy is? I mean, the difference in what they're for or what they do?
Yes, we know all about them. Tremendous amount of science and research on exactly what they do. And it's real complicated. HDLs seem to be protective. And it turns out that HDLs are related to lots of things, our body weight, to our dietary patterns, to our glucose intolerance if someone has a tendency to diabetes. And they're also largely genetically determined, as all these particles are.
Mm-hmm. So it's the genes way down inside your cells that are giving instructions to the liver as to what to make and how much to make. And
yes, okay. Exactly. In fact, there is a recent sort of landmark New England Journal article just last year on trying to answer this exact question: how much of heart disease and cardiovascular disease is genetic and how much is influenced by lifestyle changes? And they looked across huge groups of people studied for decades, about 55,000 participants.
Wow.
In the study, and they had genetic analysis on all of them, and they had a list of their dietary patterns for all these participants.
So what we've been eating over the course of decades.
Yep. And they came up with a number of about 50%. 50% of heart disease is driven by genes and 50% by lifestyle.
So, okay, going back to the happy and the lousy, what is the relationship between the two in our blood? So we have one that's lousy and one mm-hmm. that's good. Does the lousy overwhelm the good, or does the good overwhelm the lousier?
Yeah, both of that happens to some degree. So the bad ones are the LDL particles are like the brick and mortar of plaque, so or more like the bricks. So they're depositing into the walls of the artery,
mm-hmm.
and then the good cholesterol to some degree extracts those and takes them actually out of the walls of the artery.
Oh, so. How do we get good cholesterol and get rid of the bad cholesterol?
The best way would be to pick new parents.
There you go.
Genetic, but it's
well. Yeah, I mean, you look like a very healthy man, of a doctor, and your parents, your father had this genetic disease of cholesterol. What do you do?
Well, I do everything I possibly can because I'm in a very high risk group with my family history, and I don't smoke, never have, and I exercise and I eat right.
Mm-hmm.
And for my particular genetic disorder, I needed to correct it with medications.
Okay.
And so I've been on medications for 30 years, medicines that my father didn't have back in his day.
What kind of medicine?
Like statin, for example, mm-hmm. one of the kind of main LDL lowering medications, and also I'm on a new injectable drug that's specific for kind of my disorder.
Wow. And there's a lot of that going on, isn't
yeah.
there? A lot of new medications coming online
yeah.
because of the research. Now, do you notice a difference with the new injectable? Or would you notice
yes.
a difference? You do.
Well, the new injectables have been studied in fairly large studies, 10, 20,000 participants
wow.
studied over several years. We don't have data over decades, but we have data over several years. And so they have significant benefit over that short period of time.
And that's to get these medications approved. That's what they have to go through, right? You have to.
Yeah.
They have to go through these case studies.
Right. Lots and lots of research.
And backing up a bit, what about the possibility of genes, genetic messing with your genes to get rid of those lousy cholesterols.
Yeah.
And anybody working on that, toward that?
They absolutely are. There's lots and lots of research in that area.
Wow. Yeah. So the possibility being maybe, just maybe, you'd be able to fix your genes so that they only made happy cholesterol instead of bad ones.
Right.
Wow. Well, you see a lot of that going on in plant physiology now. You know, they're doing a lot of changes in that way, but who knows where that'll take us. Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Today we're talking about the heart, what we could do to eat our way to a healthier heart. Half of us have cardiovascular disease. What are we going to do? Got to do something. We'll ask Dr. Jay Johnson what we can do to be healthier. Do stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it must be a very exciting time to be in medicine with all of this, these new possibilities, new drugs coming out. But I've become very skeptical over the years, having been in media. I pay particularly close attention to what's going on in the media. And it seems like every week for the last umpteen decades, on television, nightly news, they have a new cancer cure.
Right.
And it at least you'll have cancer. Do you see promising new results from these in your practice? Are they working?
Yeah. For heart disease, we absolutely. It's very exciting. We see tremendous advances. Every year, every decade. And it's paid off. You know, the death rate from cardiovascular disease has plummeted over the years, with our understanding of the problem and the process that people develop heart disease with. Absolutely, you have to be skeptical with industry and corporations with pushing their interests forward, whether it's pharmaceutical industry or the device industry, that's true in any field.
So when the new drug salesman walks into your office, what do you think? What do you have to offer here, right?
Yes. Well, we don't spend time with them. I mean, that's really not our source of information. And the great thing about medicine and cardiology is it's a wonderful science, and there are wonderful, wonderful scientists advancing care forward. And we have large organizations that can independently assess therapies and so we don't have to, we can look at the drug company information with skepticism.
Let's go to what we do that's really bad for our hearts, and you mentioned a few. I don't do this and I don't do that, and yeah. I do. What do we do that's really bad for our heart and our cardiovascular system?
Well, probably number one is tobacco. Would be smoking is the...
What does tobacco do that's bad? I mean, it seems like you might get lung cancer or something, but what does tobacco do to foul up the cardiovascular system?
Yeah, it turns out tobacco is really hard on the blood vessels. It promotes that inflammation and that plaque development, and one of the leading causes of clogged arteries and strokes and heart attacks is tobacco use.
So... step number one, get off the tobacco.
Yeah.
Wow. I had not realized that was played a significant role in the blood vessels. You know, you think, well, of course it screws up your lungs and everything else, but blood vessels.
Yeah.
And that's how you get all of the nutrients and oxygen to all parts of your body. So smoking tobacco is like putting a stop to just about everything then.
Yes.
Okay, folks, there you go. Step number one, don't smoke, period. What about these new forms of tobacco use, the vapors? Right. Is there a difference there?
Yeah, there's a big difference. There's a lot less of the tars and the other compounds that come with burning any organic vegetable matter. So probably quite a bit healthier for your arteries. But we're waiting for sort of long-term studies and data on how much other harms it can have.
And, of course, what about pot smokers? Same thing as tobacco then, right?
Same thing. It's true. It's burning any organic vegetable matter creates smoke, and that's hard on the lungs and hard on the arteries.
Okay.
With marijuana, people typically inhale a lot less smoke than a regular tobacco user, because tobacco users are often doing a pack of cigarettes a day, whereas marijuana users are.
So do you recover for, what about for all of us who used to smoke many years ago? Do you recover?
Oh, very quickly. Yes.
You do. Mm-hmm. So quit smoking today and be better off tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wow. Smoking, there you go. You know, my favorite though is, I'll save that for last. What about drinking?
Oh yeah, alcohol. I get lots of questions about that. So this is also something that's very well studied, and the relationship between alcohol and cardiovascular disease has a U-shaped curve. So it looks like people who drink zero alcohol are a slightly higher risk of cardiovascular disease, and people.
Oh, there's good news then, huh?
People who drink a lot of alcohol are also at higher risk.
Okay, so that's the bad news.
So
if you drink, drink in moderation.
Moderation, yeah.
And is there a difference between what you drink, beer, wine, or booze? Is there
that's a little harder to dissect out in these large studies. The current international guidelines and recommendation are about, you know, 1 to 2 drinks a day is okay. It seems to be generally healthful for the heart.
And for the disposition as well, probably. Drugs.
Yeah.
We don't know, because the drugs are such a broad category that it's hard to probably figure that out. But
it's hard to figure out, but we do see a lot of heart disease from drugs, unfortunately. And in our community here in Santa Cruz, we've got a fairly high population of methamphetamine users. And we'll see a lot of heart disease from that, as well as...
What terrible stuff, but what does it do to your cardiovascular system when you ingest methamphetamines?
It wreaks havoc on the cardiovascular system. It can physically damage the heart. We'll see young people with horribly damaged, weakened hearts as the result of meth use. It can affect the pulmonary vascular system.
So if you want to get really old really fast,
yeah,
it's like the pictures they put out of meth users. You look at them and you go, oh my goodness, this is terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Well, before we get into foods, one more thing that I wanted to ask. And what about indolence? You know, it seems to me that people who are just indolent, which is to say that just hanging around existing.
Yeah. Well, in terms of physical activity, and there's a tremendously strong relationship between cardiovascular disease and activity, or I'd call it exercise or whatever you want. But it doesn't really matter what kind of activity a person does. If you sort of look at calories burned per week, you know, there's a strong relationship. The more someone does physically, the less heart disease they have.
So, but if you do, you better not be like Jim Fix and have arteries filled with plaque, or you're going to be in big trouble when you're doing your morning jog.
Right.
You might end all things right there. And that was he could have figured out that he had this blockage, could he not? I mean,
he probably could have, and I don't know the details of his case, but I tell you, I see it all the time where people will focus on one healthy aspect. They'll focus on just on their diet or just on their exercising and ignore all other factors or genetic factors that they might have. And they miss it.
Okay, so one has to pay attention to just about everything. Folks, this is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Dr. Jay Johnson, and your heart. My heart, too. Half of our hearts are in big trouble What happened? How did we get there? And how do we work our way out of that? That's the question on the table today. You and me in our hearts. Right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Yeah, we have a lot of territory to cover because now we're going to be talking about the impact foods have on our cardiovascular system. That so many of us are in trouble. 50% of us, the American Heart Association. Now, wait a minute. This new statistic that they're coming up with, did they just change how they measure what's good and what's bad?
Yes, that is part of the problem.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't so bad, and now they changed the way they see things, and now it's bad.
Yes, that's true. There's been a general decline in heart disease over the last couple of decades. If you define hypertension as a form of heart disease, just plain old high blood pressure, that was recently redefined because we're learning that there's a strong relationship between high blood pressure or one's average blood pressure and cardiovascular disease. And it's pretty much a linear relationship, meaning that the lower your blood pressure is, the healthier you are, the less likely you are to have cardiovascular disease. And so they recently redefined hypertension and they moved the numbers. So anyone with an average blood pressure, any adult with an average blood pressure over 130 is now considered to have hypertension, whereas 140 was generally the cutoff before.
Oh.
And so by changing that definition overnight, you have
a lot of people. So maybe not all of us are really all that sick, but they just changed the way they see things.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Well, that's significant. Still, half is still half. And what are we eating that is causing so much trouble?
Yeah, that's a great question. Your diet is absolutely a cornerstone of our treatments and for preventing heart disease. This is also something that's very well studied. It's hard to summarize it in just a few words, but generally the shift towards a plant-based diet, lots of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and less of the processed meats, refined carbohydrates.
So this is the Mediterranean diet that Ansel Keys was pointing to in the 1950s. So we're still headed down that track. Okay. What about the fact that Ansel Keys says that dietary fats don't have any impact on cholesterol?
Well, that's largely true. You know,
it kind of gets confusing in there, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Yeah, and it's within reason. Certainly dietary cholesterol has very little impact because it's actually hard to get cholesterol naturally. Not a lot of foods have very much cholesterol. Most of our fats are saturated or unsaturated fats. That's the mm-hmm. that accounts for the bulk of our fats in our diet.
Now, are we still in agreement with the American Heart Association that saturated fats are bad and unsaturated fats are good?
That's true, although the relationship's not as strong as we once thought.
Okay.
Probably.
I can eat eggs?
And eggs have really been taken off the bad list. There's considerable data showing that eggs are not such a bad culprit when it comes to cardiovascular disease. They're a great, good source of protein in relatively inexpensive protein and vitamins and minerals. And their relationship with cardiovascular disease is not clear. It's not not a bad one.
Cheeseburgers?
Yeah, so I'll tell you the list of the big bad categories, and number one on the list of bad categories are what they call processed meats.
Oh yeah.
So that's deli meats, sausages, sandwiches,
and that's because it has lots of nitrosamines and mm-hmm. who knows
and
what
salts,
yeah.
Yeah, and fats, and many cases they will lump hamburger meat into that category. Yeah.
Okay, what about just steak, ribeye steak?
Yeah, once in a while.
Once in a while.
That's okay.
Which is probably the way it should be once in a while.
Right.
And with respect to that, what about just the fact that you eat a lot of different things instead of yes. one or two things?
No, Michael, I think that's a really good point because I think people get focused so much on diet. I'll get questions about the difference between a canola oil or a safflower oil or this or that, and it's really hard to tease out those little differences. We like to look at dietary patterns, so that in eating from many, many different categories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when somebody comes to you and say, should I go with the canola oil or the safflower oil, you go, I don't know. And it's probably not all that significant, is it?
Right. It's, you know, we like to get your fats from vegetable sources. So mm-hmm. vegetable oils are superior to the saturated fats from dairy products.
But what about my butter?
Yeah, and a little butter once in a while is not so bad either. You know, it's all about balance. And as long as you get a lot of fruits and vegetables in your diet and whole grains, you know, putting a little butter on your whole grain bread is not so bad.
And what about the fats in nuts? Are they good?
Yes, nuts are very good.
Very good.
Nuts have wonderful fats in them and fibers and nutrients. Tremendous data on the relationship between nut consumption and atherosclerosis.
It's really?
It's very positive.
Oh, well, that's good news because I've taken to eating a lot of nuts. So yeah. I'm doing one thing right. Yay. Folks, this is the Food Chain right back. We're going to ask what we should be eating now to get a healthy heart and a healthy cardiovascular system. Not just the heart, it's the whole system. And it's what makes us run. And when that quits running, so do we. Stay tuned.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, one of the things we certainly want to talk about is what we should be eating, because there's so many choices out there in the world that maybe we should start focusing on what we should be eating to take better care of our hearts. And of course, one of the things that I'm really frightened of is anything in a convenience store.
Yeah.
There's not much to eat there. And a lot of people eat there. So what should we do in terms of our diet? What is the ideal thing for us to really be looking for in the way we eat?
Well, I like what Michael Pollan said about shopping and eating is shop the perimeter, you know, at least in a grocery store where the fruits and vegetables, you know, whole grains and where the food is and avoid, you know, the prepared food, packaged foods and things like that.
So I just had an interview with a gal. We're talking about labeling genetically modified foods, and the point was made that 75% of the processed food in a grocery store contains genetically modified ingredients, which to me says glyphosate. Is there any indication that glyphosate is having an impact on our cardiovascular system?
I do not know of research connecting those two. So I can't really comment on that. I think the sound research looks at big dietary patterns.
So again, yeah.
It's hard to dissect out.
So if you're down in that nitty picky, then good luck finding any data on it. Then.
Right.
So look around the grocery store, and you find those things that are pretty much unprocessed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. The processed foods, particularly the refined grains, and we haven't mentioned one of the number one bad items, which is sugar sweetened beverages.
Yeah, so, well, sugar sweetened anything. Okay,
right. And so refined sugars and refined grains are
now. What impact does sugar have on the cardiovascular system?
Well, it's a couple of problems. One, it's a lot of calories, and I should mention, Michael, the number one overriding advice about diet and heart disease is eat less. Whatever you eat.
Less is more.
Cut down the calories. So that's the number
one. So weight is a big factor then.
Yeah.
And Lordy knows if you look around, we're in big trouble in that respect, right?
Yeah. So the sugared vegetables or sugared beverages, and sweetened desserts and whatnot are rich sources of calories. They tend not to provide a lot of satiety. You don't feel full or satiated, and so they're sort of empty calories.
Yeah, I figured out how to avoid a lot of sugar calories, and when I eat out, I always ask for rhubarb pie. Nobody ever has it, so I never have anything to eat. It works pretty good. But there it is, really. It's eating those processed foods that have a lot of sugar and added ingredients is really where we're probably getting into the most problem, right?
Right, yeah.
So eat your veggies, eat your meats in moderation, eat as close to the ground as you possibly can.
Yep.
And avoid as much as possible everything else. Dr. Jay Johnson, what fun. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Any final bit of advice?
Yes, watch your numbers. So look at everything in your life, your blood pressure numbers, your cholesterol numbers, as well as your fitness and dietary patterns.
There it is, folks. Thank you all for tuning in.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.